Dixon, we are live and the floor is yours.
Good evening. Thank you. Welcome to the May 9th, 2023 meeting. I'll ask the city clerk to take establish a quorum and take roll, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes, I'm here.
Councilmember Edwards?
Here.
Councilmember Landrum?
Here.
Councilmember Ford?
Here.
And Mayor Wixom?
Here. Thank you very much. With that, we'll take a moment of silence. Thank you. And if I could ask Councilmember Edwards to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Neumeier, is there anything for you to share a closed session report?
Good evening, Madam Mayor. No closed session items to report.
Thank you so much. With that, we will move into mayor and council member reports. And I will ask Councilmember Barton to start off, if she would, please.
I was afraid you were going to do that. I was going to give my time to Jen.
You know that I always have a list, don't you? Thank you. Okay, and it's good to hear your voice, Mayor. My report this evening is really just about the amazing events that have happened around Morro Bay. I had the excitement of attending the kite festival. My dog and myself and my husband walked to it, and we got to view the amazing kites that were in the air and all the families that were enjoying it, all ages. Absolutely beautiful to see, and a free event that anyone can enjoy is always really special, as well as the Cruise in Morro Bay Car Show, another great event that is available to anyone who wants to just come and enjoy it. You know, there's no ticket to be sold to view the cars or to view the kites. So I love that Morro Bay, that we have events like that, that we can offer the public and visitors alike and our community to come together and enjoy something quite amazing. And on the subject of events, we have an upcoming event. We have the Ironman event, which I know I've talked about before, but I want to bring it up again because well, first of all, let me tell you, the date is May 20th, and it's going to start bright and early, and like, I think 5:30 is the opening event. It starts pretty darn early, and the swimming event starts at like 7:30, and yeah, so it's an event, but it starts really early. I'm excited to be a volunteer. I will be there volunteering, and I just got an email today from the organizer thanking you for volunteering, but also asking you to have a show if you're still new volunteers. So that's what I'm going to do. If you're interested in volunteering for the Ironman event coming up, sorry, the Ironman 7.3, make sure I say that correctly. You can go to, and this is a really long end or early death, I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it. It's IM70.3 Morro Bay@volunteers.com. I'll say that one more time. IM70.3 Morro Bay@volunteers.com if you're interested. And yeah, that's all I have for events. And the last thing I'll talk about is I had the honor of attending the League of California Cities Chamber County Dinner, along with my colleagues, council members, and as well as our assistant city manager, Sarah Johnson-Morris. It was a great event to learn and meet with other cities, all regions and beyond. And just getting a chance to talk to them about issues in their cities and the amazing accomplishments of those cities and sharing ours as well. It's always great to socialize and get to know more about your neighbors. So that's all I have for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Edwards?
Well, I don't want to steal your thunder, Mayor, so you kind of know where I'm going to go with this. So maybe if you want to.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
If you want to come in when I talk about this, you know, this is kind of a strange thing to say that I was excited for, but I was indeed excited to have our first Vistra subcommittee meeting and also the first meeting with Vistra representatives. It was myself, the mayor, and Greg Carpenter, our city manager. And I think probably the best way to describe this was that essentially the representatives explained to us that the process is slowed down, very slowed. And they define this by two items, essentially, and that is the CEQA and the EIR report process, as well as a Diablo's exemption. So those were two items that they mentioned. We also expressed to them that we would like to see reestablished communication and that we are hearing from our community that they are concerned with regards to the project. And we have encouraged them to work on improving their communication channels with the city and our community, as well as, you know, as we're waiting on the technical process to happen, that communication really needs to happen within the community, especially before we get to public hearing and, of course, to decision-making process. And that's it.
Thank you. Councilmember Landrum?
No, other than our trip here has been really enlightening, and there's so much information. I need to process it, but and we realize more than ever that the community needs to be brought in and kept up to date as much as possible.
Thank you. And with that, I'm going to just tag back with Councilmember Edwards. Yes, we did meet with Vistra last week and had an opportunity to restart some dialogue that I think had been lost along the way, and ask some questions, get some information, and wait for their next steps. I want to thank Congressman Carvajal for his visit last week. We appreciate him coming to town. I spent some time with him down having lunch on the Embarcadero and meeting with some of the businesses, along with receiving their check for $1.5 million towards our infrastructure repairs for our North T Pier, and a gentle reminder that we were looking for the rest of the funding. So we'll continue to work on that. The Car Show and Kite Festival, as Councilmember Ford shared, were great events. Shout out to Cruising Morro Bay. They do a great job with their group putting on the car show every year, and all those that are volunteering and involved, as well as Sean Farmer and his group with the Kite Festival. There's a lot of people in town, tourist-wise, and a lot of locals out enjoying the events. And again, with Council Member Landrum's comments, we are in Sacramento right now attending Offshore Wind Conference along with our Harbor Director. Ted's here with us also, and a large contingency of government and local representatives from San Luis County. There is a lot to take in, a lot of unknowns, but I know when we get home, Councilmember Landrum and myself, along with the harbor manager and the city manager, I think we'll probably start looking for an opportunity to bring some roundtable sessions to the community and start information sharing so that we're ready in the next few months for the next steps that'll be coming down the pipeline as the state moves forward. So with that, I will turn it over. We have some presentations tonight, and because I'm out of the area, I've asked Mayor Pro Tem Ford if she could please take care of those proclamations. So I'm going to turn it over to her right now.
Thank you, Mayor Wixom. All right, I'd like to start with a first, I'd like to invite our chief, Amy Watkins, up to the podium as I read the proclamation and her crew, and then we'll let her say a few words after I'm done. All right, this proclamation is of the City Council of Morro Bay, acknowledging National Police Week and declaring May 15th, 2023 as National Peace Officers Memorial Day. Whereas in 1962, President Kennedy established National Police Week, and whereas we are honored to observe National Police Week from May 14th through the 20th, 2023, and May 15th, 2023 as National Peace Officers Memorial Day. Whereas for generations, Rural Peace Officers have answered the call to serve and protect our communities and the nation, often in dangerous and unpredictable circumstances, embodying courage, honor, and pride, and representing the best of the law enforcement profession. Whereas today, we recognize and honor the sacrifice of our fallen heroes, peace officers in California and nationally, who bravely and unselfishly gave their lives in the line of duty in the protection and services of others. And whereas the ceremony expresses our respect and appreciation for the bravery, service, and professionalism of our peace officers and peace officers throughout the San Luis Obispo County and nationwide, as they serve and protect us. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Morro Bay City Council does hereby call upon all Morro Bay community members to observe and acknowledge this day, Monday, May 15th, 2023, as Peace Officers Memorial Day, and the week of May 14th to the 20th, 2023, as National Police Week in honor of fallen peace officers who, through their courageous deeds, have made the ultimate sacrifice in the service of their communities. We recognize and pay respect to these heroes and their families. Thank you all for being here. As you see, I don't know if you, well, it's not on the camera yet, but as soon as we turn it over to the chief here, oh, there we go. You can see the amazing men and women that have joined us this evening who give their all every day for the protection and service to our community. And we thank you for that. And thank you for saying a few words, chief. I appreciate it.
Councilmember Ford, thank you, Morro Bay City Council, Mayor Wixom, for this opportunity. What I'd like to do is, first of all, thank you for the proclamation. It's very much appreciated. There isn't a day that goes by that these men and women don't think about the sacrifice and certainly the difficult nature of this job. And they train hard, they work closely with the community to make sure that they are ready to protect this community at all costs, but also protect themselves. And so this is a very important week for us, and certainly it is an honor to be recognized in front of City Council and our community. What I'd like to do briefly is just introduce the people who are here, because it's not often that you get to see them. they won't like this because they would prefer to be in the background. But we have Sergeant Nicole Taylor. We have Sergeant Tony Mosqueda. We have Detective Aaron Miller, Sergeant Will Marvos. We have Community Service Officer Miguel Salgado. We have Officer Dakota Ladau, and we have Officer Grant Hasselback. And so I'd like to keep them here for 1 second, because the other thing that the city manager has requested that I do, you want me to do that now? Okay, great. We have three officers in our community, two officers and our community service officer who has been with us since the end of last year, and we haven't had the opportunity to introduce them to our community, so I wanted to do that now in this opportunity, so thank you for the time. Officer Grant Hasselback, standing here to my left, joined the Morro Bay PD team in December of 2022. Grant is a lateral officer from El Centro PD, who brings a wealth of experience and knowledge with over 12 years in law enforcement. Grant is what law enforcement considers now a unicorn, because lateral officers are very rare. Grant is hardworking and dedicated to his family and his career. Grant is an outdoorsman, and you will find him on the water, kite surfing, surfing, and enjoying the beautiful outdoors that Morro Bay and the Central Coast have to offer. As a lateral officer, Grant completed an 8-week field training period and has been patrolling the streets of Morro Bay since March of this year. We're very lucky to have Officer Hasselback. Officer Dakota Ladau, who's standing next to Grant, joined the Morro Bay Police Department as an officer recruit in July of 2022. Dakota came to Morro Bay as a member of the United States Coast Guard. He fell in love with Morro Bay and decided this is where he wanted to serve his community. Officer Liddell was the first Morro Bay PD officer recruit, meaning he was sent to the Ellen Hancock Police Academy as a sponsored police cadet. So we paid him to go through the academy. Officer Liddell attended the police academy from July to December of 2022. Upon his successful completion of the police academy, Dakota became a full-time sworn peace officer and completed the 16-week field training program in April of this year. So welcome, Dakota. Community Service Officer Miguel Salgado Martinez. Miguel joined the Morro Bay Police Department as a community service officer in October of 2022. Miguel was born and raised on the Central Coast, where he graduated from Morro Bay High School. Miguel is an avid soccer player and values teamwork and dedication to the community. Miguel first joined Morro Bay PD as a police explorer, where he was later hired as the department's CSO. Miguel is still active as a member of the Explorer Post and one day hopes to become a peace officer for the city of Morro Bay, and I would love nothing more than to fulfill that dream for him. It is my honor to introduce these wonderful gentlemen and public servants to this council and our community. Grant, Dakota, and Miguel all personify the values that are so important to Morro Bay, to the Morro Bay community and the department that is representing well and partnering with our community to provide the highest quality of police service. So thank you for this opportunity and welcome to the three of them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Watkins and crew. It's such a joy to meet our new members to the police department, and it's just great. You know, we see them around town, and it's great to actually put a face to a name and what it is that they do and what they bring to our department. All right, we're going to move on to our next proclamation. I would like to invite our Public Works Director, Greg Qualick, up. All right, and his team. Okay, this proclamation is declaring National Public Works Week, May 21st through May 27th, 2023, connecting the world through public works. The city of Morro Bay, whereas public works professionals focus on infrastructure, facilities, emergency management, and services that are of vital importance to sustainable and resilient communities and the public's health, high quality of life and well-being of the people of the city of Morro Bay. And whereas these infrastructures, facilities, and services could not be provided without the dedicated efforts of public works professionals who are federally mandated first responders and the engineers, managers, utility workers, maintenance workers, leads, analysts, operators, and support staff at all levels of government and our private sector partners who are responsible for rebuilding, maintaining, improving, and protecting our nation's transportation, water supply, water treatment, and solid waste systems, wastewater systems, public buildings, parks, streets, sidewalks, storm drains, bikeways, street trees, and other structures and facilities essential for our citizens. And whereas it is in the public interest for the citizens, civic leaders, and children in the city of Morro Bay to gain knowledge and maintain ongoing interest and understanding of the importance of public works, first responders, and public works programs in their respective communities. And whereas the year 2023 marks the 63rd annual National Public Works Week, sponsored by the American Public Works Association, Canadian Public Works Association, and whereas the women and men comprising the Public Works Department in the city of Morro Bay are dedicated in building, maintaining, and beautifying our critical infrastructure in the service of improvements in quality of life for Morro Bay residents and visitors through projects such as the Water Reclamation Facility Program, which will provide long-term water supply resiliency and the street paving, which will provide for safe driving surfaces and extend the life of city streets infrastructure. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the City of Morro Bay City Council does hereby designate the week May 21st through the 27th, 2023, as National Public Works Week. I urge all citizens to join with representatives of the American Public Works Association and government agencies in activities, events, and ceremonies designed to pay tribute to our public works professionals, engineers, managers, and employees, and to recognize the substantial contributions they make to protecting our national health, safety, and quality of life. And I certainly agree with this statement 100%. Thank you all for being here, and we appreciate your service. And I personally think that all of you are so accommodating and quick to respond when I have a million questions about things happening in our city. And I just want to thank you so much. So, Mr. Qualick.
Thank you, Councilmember Ford and Honorable Mayor, members of the City Council. Very honored to be receiving this proclamation. Last year we had a whole group with us. One of our employees was dressed as a traffic cone. This year, I've invited our managers, and I'll introduce them in a second, but I'll just share that, I have been here for 2 years, as of tomorrow, with the City of Morro Bay. And I have found this team, this public works team, nothing but phenomenal. We've gone through a lot of changes. We've worked on some big projects. We work on some small projects. I find that this team holds themselves to a high standard. It cares about the work and is committed to working with the public and the city council to get things done here in this community. So I'd like to introduce our city engineer, Eric Riddio. He oversees the engineering division. Janine Burlingame is our management analyst, and she oversees admin as well as some programs like transit and solid waste. And Damaris Hansen, who is our utility division manager, who oversees water and sewer, and also the plant startup. You know, Public Works, we do have 36 employees. We're doing a lot of exciting things. We could not do it without the support from the community, from our city staff, and of course, from our city council. So thank you.
I want to make a little comment. As I was coming here tonight, I crossed over the new paving near the bus depot, and it was another just super job that was done. And I so appreciate that we are working hard with our contractors and producing such beautiful pavement. So,
all right. Okay, so we have one more proclamation for this evening. I'd like to invite up Matthew Pinnon or Pinnon. I'll let you correct me on the pronunciation of that. Pinnon, okay, from the Foster Care Support Program. All right, this evening we are doing a proclamation for the City of Morro Bay, proclaiming May as National Foster Care Month. Whereas the City of Morro Bay recognizes the importance of providing children safe, healthy, and loving homes when they are unable to remain in the home of their biological family. And whereas there are more than 420,000 children in the United States in the foster care system, and whereas more than 28,000 children in California are in the foster care system, and whereas there are over 250 children, youth, and teenagers in the county of San Luis Obispo who are in the foster care system, and whereas to help these children have a healthy, loving, and stable home environment where they can thrive and feel connected to a community that cares for them, and to support the resource families that provide these critical homes, the City of Morro Bay is acknowledging National Foster Care Month to raise awareness about the need for more resource family homes in our county for local children, and join other organizations to celebrate resource families in our community. And whereas this effort, along with similar celebrations in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, will offer children the chance to live with healthy, loving, and stable resource families when they cannot live with their birth families, and encourage other dedicated individuals to make a powerful difference in the lives of a child through resource family care. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council for the City of Morro Bay does hereby proclaim May as National Foster Care Month in the City of Morro Bay, and in doing so, urge all citizens to join in a national effort to raise awareness about the importance of foster care and resource family care. Thank you so much for being here, Mr. Pinnon. So, if you'd like to say a few words.
Yes. Well, thank you so very much. And congratulations to you for reading those three proclamations. definitely could not have done it better myself. So thank you. I'd just like to say on behalf of the County of San Luis Obispo Department of Social Services, thank you so very much for letting us come here tonight and receive this proclamation. We appreciate the support of the City of Morro Bay and all the council members and the community that is here tonight in person, but also virtually. Foster care is an integral part of the continuum of care for children in need here within the state of California, and most importantly here within the County of San Luis Obispo. On average, our department receives close to 270 reports of child abuse or neglect on a monthly basis. These reports are evaluated, triaged, investigated, and responded to by a dedicated staff of social workers. If we decide or determine that children cannot remain with their birth parents, then they are placed into foster care. These children and their families receive a number of services, including mental health, treatment for addictions, parent coaching, services for medical needs, and resource family are the ones that provide a stable and loving home for the children in foster care. During this time, resource families are providing an opportunity for these children to have a safe, loving home while their parents are working towards reunification. As you can imagine, it takes a vast community to help secure the resources and meet the needs of the most vulnerable children. In addition to the social workers that I mentioned, we have a vast array of agencies, contractors, service providers that help support the work that we do, and most importantly, care for these children and ideally reunite them with their families. There are too many to mention, but I do want to say that there are many more individuals, businesses, and agencies that help support the effort in caring for the children within our county and even here within the City of Morro Bay. In honor of National Foster Care Month, our agency produced a short video highlighting some of the great work that is being done within our community. We have several youth engagement program ambassadors. These are former foster youth that work with our department to help us identify needs and make course corrections to improve the work that we do within the foster care system. We're gonna go ahead and share that with you all, and feel free to share that in the City of Morro Bay social media or other social media platforms to highlight the need. And in closing, I just wanted to highlight that there are on average about 250 children in foster care within our county on a monthly basis. And we only have about 110 resource families that help us care for these children. The need is great. It is important. And we're asking anybody and everybody that has a little space in their home and a whole lot of love in their heart to consider taking the next step to help supporting our children in foster care. You can, of course, do that by visiting slowfostercare.com, or you can always give us a call, and one of our amazing administrative professionals will be happy to help guide any family or community member through the process. And that phone number is 805-781-1705. And with that, thank you so very much, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Good night.
Thank you. And with that, I'm going to turn back over to you, Mayor.
Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone. Really important issue, foster care in our county. I know that they're always looking for advocates. Thank you to our officers and our public works team for all you do and your service in our community. Our next presentation is going to be from the National Estuary Program, and they are going to provide us with a state of the bay. So please join us.
Good evening. Oh,
Oh, thank you. Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Melody Grubbs, Executive Director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. I'm going to give you a few intro slides into our program, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ann Kitajima, our Assistant Director, to go over some of the results from our State of the Bay. So who are we? We're located right here in Morro Bay on the Embarcadero across the street from the Shell Shop. We are a nonprofit, non-regulatory agency. We're part of a network of 28 national estuary programs in the United States. In California, there are three of them. So we're right here in the Central Coast. We're one of the smallest national estuary programs, but arguably, I think, have one of the prettiest and most pristine habitats in the region of the estuary programs. It's my favorite estuary program. We bring together public, government, nonprofits, and landowners to protect and restore Morro Bay. So where do we work? We're called the National Estuary Program, but our kind of extent of work extends beyond the estuary itself. We conduct work in basically all the waters that feed into the estuary or into the Morro Bay Estuary. And so we do quite a lot of work with landowners, and we do work around Cuesta and going up into Choro Creek and Los Osos Creek. The watershed in total is about 48,000 acres, so 75 square miles is kind of our study area. And the estuary itself is about 2,300 acres. And so I like to say we have kind of a trifecta of programming in our estuary program. We focus on restoration and conservation. We also conduct a lot of monitoring and research that helps inform some of the actions that we take in the estuary. And we have a pretty robust education and outreach component too, with a free nature center at our office. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ann Kitajima.
Okay, so I'll start out talking about eelgrass. So eelgrass is a plant that puts down roots in our bay, and we're very fortunate to have eelgrass. Not many areas on the coast do anymore. And so eelgrass serves a lot of important functions in our bay. It helps improve water quality. It sequesters carbon, which helps mitigate climate change, and it also provides habitat for a lot of different types of wildlife, as you can see in this diagram. So if you've been paying any attention to eelgrass in Morro Bay over the last few years, it's been quite a roller coaster ride. So we map eelgrass about every other year. In 2007, we mapped 344 acres of eelgrass. And then from that point, over the next decade, we experienced a very steep decline in eelgrass. So we had fewer than 20 acres in 2017. So in 2017, though, we did start to notice small patches of eelgrass in the mid and back bay where it had completely disappeared. And then from that point on, we've experienced a basically insane recovery of eelgrass. And in 2021, we mapped 500 acres. So one of the projects we were involved in regarding eelgrass was restoration efforts. So the idea is kind of like you do in your garden, you might transplant something from where it's doing well and put some where it's not doing so well. So we would harvest eelgrass from areas like Coleman Beach where it was doing fine, and we'd plant it in areas of the bay where it had disappeared. So in the picture on the left, you can see plots of eelgrass. Each plot has 72 plants. And then in the photo on the right, you can see a year later, the original 72 plants expanded to quite a large bed. So let me be clear, we're not claiming credit for the 500 acres of eelgrass that are now present in the bay. But the idea behind the restoration was to help eelgrass hold on during the dark times and to relocate it in areas where it had completely disappeared to help it recover. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about safe swimming. So this is a photo of Coleman Beach. It was probably a Saturday, beautiful sunny day. So you can see lots of people out enjoying the bay. And in order to do all the recreating that people want to do, the waters have to be clean in order for it to be safe. So there are a lot of things out there, unfortunately, that could potentially make you sick. And it's impossible for us to test for every single one of them. So instead, we test for what are called indicator bacteria. And those are bacteria that tend to be present when fecal contamination is present. So we test monthly for an indicator called Enterococcus, and we've been testing since 2005. So the process is that our volunteers head out each month. They collect samples from 8 sites around the Bay. They take them back to the lab to process them. They incubate overnight, and then they return the next day to read the results. So this map, each dot shows one of the locations where we monitor. And they were chosen because they were popular recreation spots. So Coleman Beach, Tidelands, Windy Cove, State Park Marina, Pasadena Point, Baywood Pier, Cuesta Inlet, and Sharks Inlet. And then the color of each dot indicates the bacteria status. So as you can see, we've got all green dots. So we have good or very good bacteria levels, which means low levels. So basically a grade of A or B. But one thing to keep in mind is that even if bacteria is typically low, after a storm, all bets are off. The bacteria levels are always high. So Surf Rider and Heal the Bay recommend staying out of the water for 72 hours after a storm. So just as we need clean water to be able to swim safely in the bay, we also need clean water if we want to be able to safely eat things growing in the bay, like oysters. So we are fortunate to have 2 commercial oyster farms in our bay. This is a close-up on the Morro Bay Oyster Company's farm. And so they grow their oysters in these mesh bags that you can see in the photo. The bags are hanging from these long lines that are strung between posts. And the end of each bag has a float on it. And so when the tide comes in, the float rises and the bag tips up and all the oysters fall to the bottom of the bag. And then the tide goes out, the bag falls, again, the oysters fall to the bottom of the bag. And so what that does is it prevents the oysters from growing all twisted and clumped by that shaking. It separates them so they grow to that nice shape that you expect to see when you order an oyster in a restaurant. And so these self-tipping bags actually save quite a bit of labor, because before it took a human to come shake the bag or flip it to stir them, and now the tide does a lot of the work for them. And then this is a drone image of our other farm, the Grassy Bar Oyster Company. And so you can see they also grow their oysters in bags, and some of them are on those long lines, just like Morro Bay Oyster Company. So you can see the long, the bags and those long lines. They also have some growing area north of this image. And then that white structure is the barge where they bring the bags of oysters on, they size them, bag them up to prepare them for market. So in Morro Bay, you can only grow oysters commercially in specified areas. These are the lease areas you can see here that are managed by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And you can see State Park Marina kind of off to the right, just to give you a reference as to where we are in the bay. So the areas that are colored orange are areas where harvesting is not allowed, either because they have water quality data showing that the water is not clean enough, or there's a lack of data for those areas. So the farmers are responsible for collecting the samples, taking them to the lab, and paying for the analysis. But if there's a portion of the farm that they don't plan on using, it doesn't make sense to do any testing. So there are portions of that orange area which just we don't know what the bacteria levels are. And then the green areas are areas where there's a history of data showing that the waters are clean enough for harvesting and safely consuming oysters. The green dots, I'm sorry, they're kind of hard to see. The green dots show some long-running water quality monitoring sites. And the color of the dots, the green color, indicates that the fecal coliform numbers are low, and meaning it's safe to harvest shellfish and eat shellfish from those areas. So a project we're involved in to help keep bacteria out of the bay is called the Mutts for the Bay program. So if you've walked the Embarcadero lately or been to a park, you've seen these dispensers. They have plastic bags that are free for pet owners. So you grab one, you use it to pick up after your dog. So we manage a network of 34 dispensers around the bay. So our role in the program, we collect donations from private individuals, and business and civic organizations will sometimes sponsor a dispenser. And so we buy the pet waste bags by the pallet, and we distribute them to our dedicated volunteers, and then they keep those dispensers stocked. So we give out about 350,000 bags a year on average, which prevents quite a bit of bacteria from reaching the bay. So today I talked to you about 3 of the indicators in our State of the Bay report, but there's a lot more information that I didn't have time to get to. So I encourage you all to check out The URL at the bottom of the screen shows the full report. You can learn more about what's happening in the creeks with fish, with birds, and some potential climate change impacts for Morro Bay. So thank you for the invitation to speak today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Anne and Melody. I really appreciate the presentation, and remind everybody to visit down on the Embarcadero where your office is to pick up any of that information. And I know you're always looking for volunteers too. So thank you for the presentation. Before we move on to public comment, I would be remiss if I didn't circle back real quick, because when we were doing council member reports and updates, I skipped you, Mr. Carpenter. So city manager updates.
No problem. Our public works director, Greg Qualick, has three quick announcements.
Thank you.
Thank you, City Manager Carpenter. Three quick announcements. First, we've been seeing an uptick in political signs in the public right of way. And just a reminder to the community that political signs are allowed on private property, but there is a city policy that they're not to be put on city property or public right of way. And so when we do get complaints about them, we go and pick them up. And if you know you are part of the organization that has the political signs, you can pick them up a few days after from us. So that's just a reminder. And then two announcements. One, tomorrow we have an event that we're calling Which Way Morro Bay. And if anyone gets that reference, I'd love to hear it. But Which Way Morro Bay, the flyer looks like this. There's a bunch of them in the back. We are going to review with the community in a community forum three options for the Route 1, Route 41 Main Street intersection. In other words, the roundabout, a double signal, or kind of keep it as it is. We'll have a short presentation. We'll have a kind of an interactive activity, and then there will be just a public discussion about it. It's not going to be like a city council meeting. There's no Brown Act. It's not a Brown Act meeting. There will not be 3 minutes per speaker or anything like that. It's more going to be a group discussion. It will be held at the community center tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And then the other announcement is our utilities team did come up with some new open house dates for the Water Resources Center. So there are flyers in the back. They look like this. And we have some dates on Saturday, May 20th, Friday, June 23rd, Saturday, August 5th, and Thursday, September 21st. Please RSVP for a tour. This information is on our website. Our utilities team is especially excited to invite the community back to the facility. So if you have any questions, you can reach out to me or Damaris, or check up on the Hot Topics page of our website for more information.
Greg, I'd like to, or Mr. Qualick, I'd like to add one quick plug as well. If you're a Morro Bay High School parent and you get the newsletter, well, you should get the newsletter from your high school. And if you were like me, often there's a lot coming at you and you may have missed it. And I just want to point out that there was a survey sent out on Friday's or in Friday's newsletter to parents of Morro Bay High Schoolers to fill out regarding the Highway 1, Highway 41 Main Street intersection in Morro Bay. So I had a few friends that reached out to me and were like, oh, we're so excited that we got that survey. So I just want to make sure that if you know of someone who has a high schooler, make sure that they're that they know about it too.
Thank you, Council Member Ford, for that plug. I'll just add that that will be in the next three Friday updates from the high school. So there will be multiple opportunities if someone missed the email.
That's good to know. Thank you.
Anything else, Mr. Carpenter?
No, Mayor.
Thank you so much. With that, we will move into public comment. And I don't have any speaker slips. Unless the city clerk does, I would invite the first person to begin.
I do have just a few, Mayor.
Thank you.
First, we have Aaron Oaks, followed by Jacob Nashney.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson.
Good evening, members of the council and staff. My name is Aaron Oaks of Morro Bay. And before I begin my remarks, I just wanted to thank the Morro Bay National Estuary Program for all the wonderful work that they've been doing for our community. I had the pleasure of volunteering for them when I was in Eco Rotary back in 2013, when the eelgrass was in a dire state in the estuary. And I never had so much fun bundling eelgrass with all the volunteers. And I'm so proud of them for keeping up with that program. I know there was a lot of hesitation, a lot of concern going in, and especially when it came to climate change impacts. And so I highly encourage people to read the State of the Bay report, especially in that section, because it really covers a lot of important details that the city and the community should be fully aware of. So I can't stick around for item C3 on the agenda, but I fully support the recommendations of that. My only concern is the enforcement action on that. You know, so we are going to just reduce the speed limits on there, which is a good thing for all those major intersections that were identified in the report. And I'm happy that work was done. But I am concerned as a motorist and a pedestrian, because people have tried to run me over. It felt like so I'm walking on, you know, Monterey and Morro Bay Boulevard, and people don't see the stop signs. They don't see the speed limits. They just keep going through. And I'm glad to see the signage, but I like to see a dialogue with the council and staff and law enforcement on what kind of enforcement measures would be taking place. Do they have the resources available to have officers going on an additional patrol to catch some of these offenders? Because especially when we have a lot of these events, like we had the cruising car show just last week, I heard a lot of honking horns that was not celebratory in nature. I kept an ear open for that to make sure, you know, but you know, when we have major events in the community, there's a lot of traffic control issues and people are not as observant of the speed limits. And so I think that's just a pressing matter on a pressing concern for me. And I'm confident that the council will address that matter. And so I hope you all have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Swanson, you have the next.
Yes, Jacob Nashke.
Yep, that's me. Good afternoon, Mayor, Council, and staff. My name is Jacob Nashke of Morro Bay. I'm 24 years old, and ever since I was a toddler, I grew up visiting my grandma here. In 2016, I moved into our family home to attend Cal Poly, and in 2020, I graduated as a student athlete studying nutrition. Don't worry, I'm not here to talk to you about your diets. Instead, I'm here to speak to that of the STR permits and requirements of Morro Bay. I've done extensive research, including, but not limited to that, of reviewing the full ordinance, talking with friends and neighbors who hold STR permits, and even briefly speaking with the owner of a local Morro Bay diner. As I understand it, the initial desire to limit the amount of permits stems from the concern of having unsupervised whole home rentals, also known as secondary whole homes, which can cause an increase in traffic, noise, and even parking issues simply because they are unsupervised. As a 7-year resident and living next to 3 home share STRs, I have been fortunate enough to never run into a single one of these issues, but I do understand where they come from, which is why I do not discount them and instead agree that they are valid concerns. With that being said, I cannot comprehend why ADUs in particular are completely barred from obtaining an STR permit. By having someone on the property in the main home to supervise the short-term rental, I would expect ADUs to not only be permitted, but also be considered a home share and not a whole home rental. I've spoken with both the city office and the business support center, but have not had any luck in answering this question, along with a few others. My family and I would love to invest in our family by investing in our property, which is not only an investment in the neighborhood, but in the city as well. I'm sure that at one point or another, the reason we live here today is either because you or a family member once visited Morro Bay, fell in love, and decided that this would be the place to purchase their forever home. The same idea goes for the tourists visiting. By constricting short-term rental options, it becomes more difficult for tourists to visit and fall in love with something they have never seen, felt, or experienced. Thank you for considering ADUs as a home share in Morro Bay. On another note, there's a small area in Morro Bay that I believe is both overlooked and underappreciated that I would love to personally invest in on behalf of the community. If the council or someone could direct me accordingly about answering questions related to the plausibility of this project, it would be greatly appreciated. Finally, I understand that in terms of age, I am outnumbered and likely considered an outlier here in Morro Bay. Please understand that I respect each and every member of this community. And so as a result, I respectfully ask that you use and abuse my youth. I am well connected within my neighborhood, but it wasn't until I looked into STRs and attended my first city council meeting that I realized my ability to be a friend and helping hand extended beyond that of just my neighborhood. With that being said, I'll be leaving a stack of cards with my contact information on the back table. Whether you or someone you know would like some help around the home, gardening, moving furniture, whatever it may be, even making a new friend, I'm more than happy to be whatever this community needs me to be. Thank you all for your time and efforts with this city.
And next we have Terry Simons.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. My name is Terry Simons, Morro Bay, and as you know, I tend to be rather impromptu based on what happens before me. I will say I was very impressed with the young gentleman who just spoke and is exactly the kind of citizen that I encourage to become involved in local politics, and I'm very pleased that he took the time to come and speak to you tonight, and I hope we can help him along his way. Now, as to Chief Watkins' presentation, it's very exciting for me to see that she's shaping her department in the way she is, and I commend her on her continued efforts to give us the best police force we possibly can. Mr. Qualics, I was critical last time you spoke on the roundabout, but I will say that you put your reputation on the line when it came to the concerns of the Art in the Park people regarding the bus project. And by my best estimation as a former and current general engineering contractor, it looks like we're well on the way to meet the deadline to be out of the way for Art in the Park. Congratulations. Thank you, sir. And I will say I noticed today that the repaving on the particular end down in front of the Grange Hall, I think it is, there was quite a significant grade deviation there, and it's beautifully done. So your department is to be commended on an excellent job in getting that job done despite the rain, despite the hassles, and despite the just general nature of trying to work with contractors. I don't know how you guys do it, but you got it. Looks like you're going to get it done, and thank you so much. There were some other people, but I'd really like to use my last remaining minute to revisit the last time I spoke before the city council was having to do with the Toro Lane project. And I know that it's also on the agenda tonight, but I'm not speaking to that aspect of it. I'm speaking to the aspect of the fact that I'm very concerned that, as near as I can tell, that the city just had yet another closed session meeting involving pending litigation. I'm presuming that it might be that issue, or maybe we have somebody else that's threatening our city with pending litigation. If so, I know we never get to know that. But I think when I spoke the last time, I almost facetiously suggested that perhaps the right-of-way needed to provide a bike lane could be taken on the beach side or the ocean side of the track, and that might be a reasonable compromise. I was shocked and quite amazed when I opened this week's agenda to realize there was an assessor's map that shows, in fact, that right-of-way already exists. It's an old paper street. It's an extension of Beachcomber. And it might be something, as the negotiations of pending litigation with the property owners on Toro Lane proceed, that would help to bring some balance to that discussion. And more on that later. Thank you.
I don't have any other speaker slips.
Anyone Thank else? You very much. At this time, I'd like to invite any other speakers for public comment.
Welcome, Betty.
Good evening, Betty Winholtz. I'm going to bring up an item that's disturbing to me. I don't think there's anything that the city's responsible for, but I find it reprehensible. Because we're a bird sanctuary. I drove behind Albertson's yesterday afternoon, and there was a dead seagull hanging from one of the trees that backs up against the fire department. It just caught my eye because of the white of his chest, and I purposely came back to look at that because I was so disturbed, and he was intentionally hung. the word that came to my mind was a lynching, because he's hung upside down by a thick wire, his tied. My assumption is that it was placed there to scare away other seagulls. Now, somebody had to kill that bird to do that. And maybe that's a legitimate way to do that. But in a bird sanctuary and where public can see it was very unsettling. And I don't know if there's some rule or something else or just some pressure that can be brought to bear. I don't know who did it. I assume the people who owned the property. But it just seemed not fitting, but also a moral issue for me. So I don't know what else to say about that other than to air my concern. And maybe someone else will have some kind of solution to that. But it was disgusting.
Welcome.
Hi, I'm Margaret Carmen. Hello to everyone. I wasn't planning to speak, so I don't have it prepared. And I want to say that I hope by the next meeting that I actually have things to send you ahead of time to report on cell EMF damage to our human bodies. As you've heard me say before, for 40 years, I've been licensed as a chiropractor, so I care about people's health. And that's why when I read that article on the front of the Estero Bay News and found out that I didn't know there was a cell tower at the Episcopal Church right up the hill from me. And I'm not blaming the city council at all, because I realize we've gotten this thing where, okay, that was a cell tower. We're going to put another one in. We're going to put a bigger one in, and we're going to put it in a steeple with a cross on top, which sounds really wrong to be radiating people with EMF and put a cross on top. I want to give you a little information where I'm coming from. Like in Europe, they don't allow Wi-Fi in schools because they know that children's cranium is smaller than adult cranium and they get EMF damage quicker than adults do. And nobody's really paying attention to, we're just getting bombarded with more and more and more EMFs. And you can't see it, but it's damage. It could be why you have heart palpitations, why you can't concentrate. And when you read that article and it tells you that all the regulatory commissions okay the amount of EMF exposure, they change the amounts that are allowed every year. It's kind of like you invent a statin drug, and so then you lower the amount of cholesterol so you can sell more statin drugs. And then you do the same thing with blood pressure medicine. And I could go on down the line with drugs, but that's what they're doing with what they tell you about EMFs and whether it's damaging to your body or not. I stood before this California Public Utilities Commission back in when they were trying to put smart meters in, and they were giving you data from the late 70s and early 80s and saying it was okay. So I just wanted to say, I'm going to send you guys some information. And I really think that, I don't know how to, the neighborhood needs to know there's a cell tower that's huge underneath the chapel. And when you, my boyfriend, the engineer, is telling me today, the way that the way the frequency comes out, I'm going to be more affected up the hill because of the way it's on a slant like that. Okay. Thank you. That was my ranting, because I want you guys to know, I want everybody to know that it's not good to put cell towers all over this beautiful city. Thank you.
Good evening, Natalia Mersuyan. I actually wasn't sure I was going to talk tonight, but I have an appointment with Dr. Carmen tomorrow, so I thought it might be good karma for me to say something in support of her comments. And what I want to say is that I don't like the terminology, but I have to consider myself what they call EMF disabled. and I therefore have a prescription against putting a smart meter on my home. I've had to pay extra for that, and you know, that's what I do to protect my health, which is the most important thing we all have. And we all are electric as long as we're living. So there is an interaction with electromagnetic fields. And I'll give you one explanation. If you want to learn more about it, you can read Dr. Cowan's book, The Myth of Contagion. And he mentions in there that Wuhan, China, is where in 2019 they purposely or accidentally released COVID-19. But just prior to that, Wuhan, China was the first city in China to be outfitted with 5G technology. And it was turned on just before people started dropping dead in the streets there. And many of the first incidences of contagion, so-called contagion throughout the world, were on cruise ships, which are also heavily outfitted with 5G technology. Anyway, it can be considered an environmental pollution. There are cities that have lobbied against it. I think the city of San Diego currently is proposing laws or zoning situations where it can't be put on schools. Oops. And I thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else for public comment? No? AGP, do you have anyone with raised hands in the queue?
Thank you. Yes, we do have two hands raised currently on Zoom. Linda Winters, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you. Linda, you are unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, everyone, mayor, council, staff, the chiefs. Congratulations, Commander Amy. Kudos to you and your staff. They were absolutely wonderful. And also to Public Works Director, Mr. Qualick. I so appreciate everything you do. I'm going to sound like I am repeating Jen Ford's speech, but I'm not. I wrote it here this afternoon. You may or may not have noticed that I am not with you this evening in my normal seat on the aisle. I've had a migraine problems and figured it wouldn't be good to fall over during this meeting. I must comment on how busy Morro Bay's been since the last meeting that lasted until 10:30 in the evening. Five glorious hours. And I wish that the last decision made about the Morro Bay to Cayucas bike path could be appealed or at least revisited. As I said, we've been very busy. The kite show at the Rock, lucky me could walk to that event, no traffic to fight, and it was great fun. Then there was the very well attended offshore energy meeting at the new theater auditorium sponsored by the Tribune over at the new theater in the high school, which was also very well attended by a multitude of concerned Morro Bay residents. We learned that no decisions had been made and it was just a discovery portion. There was still lots more room for more public comment. Moving on to the Morro Bay Classic Car Show, I didn't attend this year. No offense to the organizers. I understand it was a great event, but after 15 or 20 of them, I chose to stay home. Last night, I helped at the Morro Bay Monday night community dinner, as I do every Monday night, and that just plain makes my heart feel really good. And now tonight, where I will announce that I have achieved one of my personal goals regarding the mobile home park residents of Morro Bay. I was officially appointed as Region 8 Associate Manager to the GSMOL Ombudsman Group, which is really a mouthful, giving me access to statewide information and counsel from our state attorney, and helping all of our Morro Bay residents better understand their rights. It only took me 5 years to achieve this goal. Onward and upward. Tomorrow, the city forum about the Highway 41, Main Street Highway 1 intersection. I'll be there. And Mr. Qualick, for your information, there are 8 mobile home and RV parks within a 3/4 mile range of that particularly busy intersection. You are a very, very busy man. I will see you either tomorrow night or on May 23rd. And oh, by the way, happy Mother's Day to everybody in between. And oops, I almost forgot about the competition on the 20th as far as the Ironman. Once again, I will not be a competitor. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead. Judy Lynn Setting, you are next with your hand raised on Zoom. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, Judy Lynn. Okay, Judy, you are unmuted.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for being here, and thank you for all that you do for our city. I'd like to give a special thank you to Melody and Anne for their report on our Estero Bay and for preserving our Estero Bay's unique ecosystem. And I would like to ask Greg Qualick for a definition, his definition for political signs. And then the last thing I'd like to talk about is item C2 under business, the Cloisters Levy. And I know that the city collects $149,000 for this assessment and has been for many years. And in my little brain, I'm thinking $149,000 is really enough to fund 2 full-time maintenance workers. Yet I only see somebody out in our neighborhood once every few months. So I would like to request a line item expenditure report as to where that money is going. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. I do not see any raised hands left in the queue.
Thank you, AGP. With that, we will bring it back to council and close public comment. Thank you to everyone this evening for your comments. And Betty, I agree with you. I'm a little saddened by somebody doing that to a seagull. Judy, please feel free to contact Public Works and they can give you information on the sign ordinances. With that, we will move to the consent agenda. And I will open public comment on items on the consent agenda.
I don't see anyone coming to the podium. AGP, is there anyone with their hand raised in the queue?
Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I will close public comment on the consent agenda and bring it back to council. Council, is there any items you would like pulled this evening?
Mayor, I'd like to pull A4.
Perfect. I was going to pull it anyway.
I had a feeling, but yep. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any other items? With that, I will move, I will motion approval of items on the consent agenda A1 through A8, less A4. I'll take a second.
I'll second.
Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. With that, we will circle back to A4. And since you pulled it, I will let you have the floor.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to, first, I want to extend my thanks to Brian Dorfman for applying for the position to join CFAC, or Citizens Oversight Finance Advisory Committee. I met Brian and his wife and their family the week I moved here. We had only been here a few days, and we were looking for something for our kids to do to get actively involved in our community, and they joined the soccer teams, and my youngest daughter ended up on Mr. Dorfman's soccer team, and he was her coach. And while she was more interested in ladybugs and cartwheels than playing ball, I just really appreciated his community involvement, from coaching to just really being involved in our community as well as their family. And so I'm excited to have him join this committee, and with his experience over what he says here, 40 years of experience being a business owner, I just want to thank you so much, Brian, for applying for this. And so thank you. And I also want to say thank you to all of our volunteers that volunteer for our boards. And you really, truly are appreciated. And anytime we have an opening, I welcome anyone in the community to please throw your hat in the ring, because it's a really great way to get to know what's happening in your city and to get involved. So that's it.
Thank you.
If I may add to that, Mayor, I am absolutely very, very happy that you've joined CFAC as the liaison to that advisory board. So thank you so much, Brian.
And with that, I'd like to actually take a few minutes, since we are not doing interviews, and invite Mr. Dorfman up for a brief moment, if he'd like to share any comments before we move forward with this appointment.
We're good. Did you want to talk about money? No, thanks. Nicole mentioned to me that they needed some more people on the finance, and so I'm just really excited. Morro Bay, of course, is a gem, and how can we not have a financial upside here? And we've all seen these examples. I've, like many of you, have lived on the coast. I've lived in San Diego and Santa Monica and Santa Barbara and Carmel and all these places. So I'm really excited to dig into the finances of the city and give our advice and see where it goes. Thank you, Carla.
Brian, appreciate that. And with that, thank you. We have a full board again. With that, I will move approval of A4, motion A4, and I'll ask for a second.
I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. We have no business items this evening, and we have, no public hearings this evening. We have three business items. So with that, I'd like to offer a short break. Council members that are there, your pleasure, 3 minutes, 5 minutes.
Okay, we'll take one, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I mean, I wanted to elaborate on what I seem to be doing.
Thank you, Mayor. We have got our devices rolling, and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to our business items, C1, C2, C3, and I don't see Mr. Qualick in the screen, but he's up. This is Public Works Hour. Thank you, Mr. Qualick.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one moment, please.
Mr. Kwalik, sorry to interrupt, but Councilmember Edwards needs to
sorry
say
about
something.
That, Greg. I believe out of prudence and at recommendation of our council, I should recuse myself from item C1 at this time to avoid possible conflict of interest. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Edwards. So items C1 and C2 tonight are very similar. These are routine items that we hear every year at this time of the year. I will give very brief verbal presentations for both items, but would be happy to provide more information if requested by the City Council. So to start with, we have item C1, and it is the approval of an engineer's report and declaring the intent to levy the annual assessment for the Cloisters Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. As the City Council knows well, the Cloisters was developed in the 1990s, and part of the development included a special condition for the coastal development permit that allowed the development to provide what we know as the Cloisters Park. And through that, we had to ensure that the maintenance of the park would be taken care of by the property owners of that district. And as a result, what came about was this assessment, which is intended to fund all maintenance of the Cloisters public areas. So I won't go into too much detail, but we do have an engineer's report that was included with the staff report that does go into that detail about what the city's responsibilities are with regard to maintaining that park. That park is maintained by Public Works crews currently. There was a short stint before my time where the city, instead of using Public Works maintenance crews to maintain Cloisters Park, instead used an outside contractor. That was generally seen as a failure. We are back to Public Works crews maintaining the park. For the assessment, the city does get $148,944, and that never changes because there was not a CPI escalator included in the assessment. I know there's been some questions about that. That said, the Cloisters Park becomes more expensive to maintain every year because every year costs go up. Costs go up for our supplies, for labor, and just about everything else related to maintenance. So our cost to maintain the Cloisters Park and the Cloisters open areas far exceed at this point what we get in revenue. And I'll just leave my comments at that. It's not necessarily a problem, but I do want to point that out. The same is true for the item for C2. So with that said, the staff recommendation is to for the City Council to adopt resolution number 2923, declaring the intent to levy the annual assessment for the maintenance of the Cloisters Park and Open Space District for fiscal year 23-24, and approving the engineer's report. And I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kwalik. I appreciate that. And with that, I will ask if there's any questions of council.
I have only one, and because it was brought up in the public comment time. I think, I want to say it was last time we looked at this when I was on council, we requested a line item. I don't know if it was an expenditure, maybe it was more about what the jobs were that were done. I'm trying to remember what that was. And because I know it came up and we talked about, you know, where maybe it was the hours that were being spent by staff. Maybe that's what it was, but I'm just totally throwing you, Mr. Kwalik, sorry, only because it came up and it wasn't something I thought about before, but do we have anything like that, a line item expenditure?
It's a good question. And I think it's one that comes up every year. So just so the council's aware, I spoke with the city clerk and we are treating that request in the public comment previously as a public records request, and we'll be responding to that individual with the information requested. As part of the engineer's report, there's a couple of attachments. One of the attachments is a list of tasks that the city is responsible for So it includes cleaning the restrooms, litter pickup, pest control, irrigation, weed control, et cetera. I mean, it goes on. And that's attachment A to the engineer's report. And then attachment B actually provides a quote unquote detailed financial summary. And this is essentially a budget for the cloisters. Now, the only budget that's captured as part of this is up to the limit of our revenue. We do absorb in the general fund the rest of the cost to maintain the cloisters area.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Qualick, is there somewhere within state law or is there a way that we could capture the part that we're not able to charge for?
It's a good question, Councilmember Barton. The only way that we could do that is through a Prop 218 process.
Right, that's what I thought.
And that would be a vote of all the members of that assessment district voting on it. And I don't believe any previous council has thought that that would be a successful venture. So we've stayed away from that.
I just wanted to ask the question.
Thank you. Any other questions from council? With that, I will open public comment on item C1.
Betty Winholtz again. For a couple of years, I've asked about repaving the bicycle path at the back of the cloisters that goes from the high school over to the state park property. And I don't know if that would be a special item that would need to be funded differently or if that can come out of the assessment fees because it is starting to get a little bit wavy and is not good for bicycle riding per se, unless you're being alert. The second thing about that assessment is it seems to me that it would not be a bad thing to ask for a 218 vote. Whether or not it's going to be successful or not, it's been a long time. Well, it's never been that we've upped that fee. And I think it doesn't hurt to ask the residents. And what would help them is then to give them the information that they're asking for so they can see that more fee is necessary. So, and that would, of course, be part of the 218 to demonstrate to them that it was important to up that fee. Whether we lose it or not, I think it would be worth the effort.
AGP, are there any raised hands in the queue?
Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. Mr. Qualick, real quick, that bike path there, is that part of that assessment funds or is that funded separately through? I walk that all the time. Is that funded separately through the city?
Thank you for the question, Mayor. I want to clarify from Betty, maybe with a head nod. We're talking about the bike path that runs parallel to the one that goes towards the high school. I mean, yeah, the one that goes parallel to the high school. Yeah, I'd have to check on that. Interestingly, we did have a conversation with a constituent from the cloisters a couple of weeks ago about repaving some of the paths within the cloisters. Some of them are in pretty rough shape. We think we have some options with our next pavement sealing project coming up this year, where it could be a bid add-on item, and there's a possibility we may be able to pay for some of that out of the cloisters fund because there is some fund balance there. That's obviously something that we'd have to take to the city council. But in terms of that portion of the bike path, I'd have to check on that.
Thank you. I appreciate you looking into that. Are there any other questions from council?
No.
With that, I will ask for a motion. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. girl.
I'll go ahead and move. I don't know if she had another question, though. Okay. I'll go ahead and move that we adopt the resolution number 29-23, approving the engineer's report and declaring the intent to levy the annual assessment for the Cloisters Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District.
I'll second.
Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Just giving you the thumbs up.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0-1.
Thank you. Would someone like to invite Councilmember Edwards back in? Thank you. With that, we'll move on to item C2. Please, Mr. Kwolek.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, this is a very similar item, except for the North Point Natural Area Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District. This is a district that came about as a special condition for the coastal development permit that allowed for the North Point development to be built. And the intent, of course, was to allow for coastal access to the public. As the council knows well, there is a private road that leads up to the North Point area. The city does not maintain that private road. However, north of that private road is the open space area with a parking lot, and the city does perform maintenance duties there, which was part of the deal with the coastal development permit special condition. I won't go through all the details, but we do a lot of routine tasks. We will blow the paths of debris and leaves and pick up debris. We check the trees. We sometimes paint the access stairway or put in new plantings. We have expenses related to refuse. That's the majority of the expense, actually, is trash pickup and some other maintenance items. Just as with Cloisters, every year in April, we bring to council a request to ask staff to prepare an engineer's report. In the first meeting, the second meeting, the engineer's report is presented, which is today's meeting in May. And then in June, we do the third and final meeting, which actually is to levy the assessment. The North Point assessment, the city receives $5,645 from 10 property owners. And that's really it. I don't have anything else to report about it, but I'll be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kwolek. With that, I will ask council, if you have any questions. No questions. Seeing no questions, I will open public comment on item C2.
We have one speaker slip, Terry Simons.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Terry Simons, Morro Bay. I had a slight concern about the assessment boundary. It's not clear to me whether what's designated as Assessor's Parcel 20, which is the 1.19 acres, which is the natural area, seems to be the focus of the city's maintenance. Is that property actually owned by the city, or is it owned by the Homeowners Association? And further, in my last appearance before the council last time, we talked about the Toro Lane issues pending with the city and potential litigation. And I just wanted to point out once again that there appears to be another alternative access that could be used for a bike lane, and that's the extension of the paper street of Beachcomber that also services the same area. And I would propose that vehicular access using Toro be discontinued and only pedestrian access, and that the improvements for an expanded bike lane could be done on the Beachcomber frontage. Obviously, this might be more concerning to the residents than using Toro, but I think that should be their decision. Thank you.
Hey, GP, do we have any hands raised in the queue?
Thank you. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. With that, we will close public comment and bring it back to council for any other questions or comments. No, with that, I will ask for a motion for item C2.
I'd like to move approval of item C2. Staff recommend City Council adopt the resolution approving the engineer's report and declaring the intent to levy the annual assessment for maintenance of the North Point Natural Area for fiscal year 23-24.
Thank you. And a second?
I second.
Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much, Ms. Swanson. And with that, we will move on to item C3. Mr. Qualick, is this you or is this Mr. Riddio?
Thank you, Mayor. This is me.
Okay.
And I'll wait for the presentation to be pulled up. I would like to say that we do have Mr. Riddio in the room in case there's some technical questions. We also have our consultant that worked on the speed survey, Michelle Mattson, joined on Zoom. And she's also available to answer any questions. So I'll go through the brief presentation. Some questions came up prior to the meeting that were then put together as agenda correspondence, and they're now on our website, about what the speed survey should have looked at or could have looked at. And so I did want to clarify for the City Council and the public what a speed survey is and what it is not. It really is a specific tool, and the tool is to help set the city's speed limits. And in doing that, it allows the police to enforce those speed limits. That's really all a speed survey is for, and it is required by the California Vehicle Code for each city to prepare one. And we get the results of the speed survey based on an evaluation of prevailing speeds on a given road, collision records, and roadway conditions. And that is work that our traffic engineer consultant does. They take a look at all of that data and then make recommendations about what speed should be on a given road. A speed survey is not, however, a guide for roadway improvements or enhancements. It's not a tool for prioritization of maintenance or capital projects related to roads. It is not a survey of all traffic issues, such as traffic calming. And it is not an evaluation of safety issues on our roads. And it is also not a tool to catch speeders. So that is not the intent of the speed survey. However, all of these items are important, and they each have their place in what we do in the Public Works Department. I'll share that some of you already know that we budgeted for a local roadway safety plan for this fiscal year. That tool specifically is to evaluate safety issues around the city as regards to our roadways. And that is something that we've already released an RFP for. We've already received proposals. We're evaluating those proposals currently, and we hope to have a consultant on contract sometime in mid-June. That local roadway safety plan, or LRSP, will help us get grant money. We've already been told that from some of our regional partners. And that is going to be a very public process where members of the community can suggest to us areas that they'd like us to examine, and then they'll make their way into this report. We would take it to PWAB, and we'd also bring the results to the City Council. The speed survey, as a result, is a very limited tool, as I've described. And so there may be more questions about that. I'd be happy to take those at the end of the presentation. Picking the wrong thing. So history, our last speed survey was conducted around 15 years ago. The California Vehicle Code requires, ignore the ENTS, that's that's just the name of the process for the speed survey, and that didn't make my edit. But the California Vehicle Code requires that we do a speed survey every 7 to 14 years. Otherwise, we can't maintain our enforceability, which means that our police department can pull folks over and write them tickets, but they're not necessarily legally defensible in court. So here's what our consultant reviews. The prevailing speeds, average daily trips on each road, the collision records and roadside conditions. I already mentioned some of this. There's some questions about when and how we should do the speed survey. That's outlined in this in the California Vehicle Code. The road needs to be dry. The survey needs to be done during off-peak hour traffic on an average weekday. So not, we don't want to look at peak traffic. Our consultant does a two-hour look at a road during that off-peak hour traffic. And then there's this first vehicle concept in a platoon. So if you imagine a radar gun looking down a street and you have one person maybe who's going very slow for some reason, maybe 10 miles an hour, and then there's a bunch of cars as a result stuck behind that first car. So they're all going 10 miles an hour. We only count the first car. We're not counting all of those cars as going 10 miles an hour, just to give you an idea of what the process looks like. So what were the results of our speed survey? I'll give highlights of our speed limit reductions. Typically for communities, this is good news. We want to see cars going slower in our residential neighborhoods in particular. So on Main Street in three different sections, we're recommending reducing the speed limit by 5 miles an hour from Radcliffe to Highway 41 down to 30 miles an hour, from Highway 1 to Yerba Buena down to 35 miles an hour, and from Marina to Morro Bay State Park Road down to 25 miles an hour. And again, that's based on the results of the speed survey as conducted by our consultant. Also on the Embarcadero from Beach Street to Coleman Drive down to 45 miles an hour. That's just some of the highlights. There's more of these listed in the staff report. Speed limit increases. Sometimes speed surveys result in a recommendation to increase speeds. There were none with this report. So, and then we also, at the request of some community members in the police department, we surveyed roads that didn't have speed limits posted. So those include Coral, Easter, Kern, Kings, Ironwood, Morro Bay Boulevard, Pacific, Radcliffe, and Quintana. And the recommendation for those roads was to post a 25 mile per hour speed limit. Nothing shocking there. I think that's what everyone expected, but we hadn't had signs up on those roads. So I'm going to skip to next steps. The next step really is to, once this is approved, if council chooses to approve it, is to replace and install speed limit signs as needed with all the streets that are listed on the table. However, to implement this, we are recommending the City Council approve an urgency ordinance. So typically, an ordinance has a first reading at City Council, then a second reading at a following meeting, and then a 30-day kind of wait period until the ordinance takes effect. The issue with that here is our current speed survey expires on May 25th of this year. And if we followed that normal timeline, we would have a window between May 25th and June 22nd where the police department would not be able to enforce speeds. And that was purely out of the Public Works Department, all new staff looking at this. We didn't know that it was actually coded in our municipal code in terms of our speed limits. That's not necessarily a typical thing. And so once we learned that, we realized the only way to maintain enforceability is to move forward with an urgency ordinance. And that brings me back to the recommendation. So first recommendation is to adopt an urgency ordinance, number 656. But then we'll also go through the regular ordinance process. We'll be bringing this back in a couple of weeks. So the other recommendation is to introduce a regular ordinance number 567 to amend chapter 10.56 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code to add the new speed limits. And I'll take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Qualick. I appreciate that. With that, council questions to staff?
Just to be sure we get it right, that said 567, our what's in front of us says 657, so we don't somehow approve the wrong.
It is 657.
Okay.
And great. The full recommendation language on the agenda title would be helpful because it includes the title of the ordinances.
Apologize for that. Thank you for the cleanup.
Thank you. Any questions of staff at this time? Seeing none?
I do. Oh. Okay. I have a question regarding when you said, Mr. Qualick, that they purposely chose not to study it during streets during peak hour traffic. Can you explain why?
Those are the guidelines that are in the California Vehicle Code.
Okay. So that they're just following. Okay. And then my other question is, you mentioned that you said something about this not being normal, or this is not this is not a normal way of doing things, I guess, requiring the survey. Is that what you were talking about? Or can you clarify what?
Thank you for the opportunity to answer that question, Councilmember Ford. I don't want to exaggerate. I think it was new for me and the city engineer. I'd want to talk with our city attorney offline to see if there's another way to do this differently next time. Next time, however, might be in 10 years. So just want to call that out. Had we done this 3 or 4 months ago, we maybe would have looked at this more closely, but because of the urgency of the item due to the enforceability question, we decided to just go with this way again.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any further questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. Any other questions from council?
I do have a question, Mayor, for Mr. Qualick. And I actually, this could be for Chief Watkins as well, whichever one of you wants to take it. But one thing that I saw within the survey was us conducting this during the winter and not during peak season. So my question is do you believe that the survey conducted was adequate measure of our traffic issue based on that?
Thank you, Councilmember Edwards, for the question. I would say that our methodology met the requirements of the California Vehicle Code. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, and I would ask Michelle Mattson to chime in here. It's not clear to me that question about adequate, it sounds perhaps a bit subjective. Ms. Mattson, is it your understanding that we should have done this during some other time of year when average daily trips may be different or speeds may be different? Would that have made a difference with regards to the requirements set out in the California Vehicle Code?
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly what I was wondering.
No, can everyone hear me? This is Michelle.
Yes.
One of the reasons it did take so long is we needed to wait until April to conduct some of these surveys on roads like Atascadero Road and Quintana Road, where we needed kind of final striping and some construction to end. So all speed surveys were taken during dry conditions when construction crews weren't present and typical roadway conditions were prevailing.
Thank you for the answer, Michelle. The question also asks whether or not we are getting adequate survey results if we are conducting the survey in our off season for tourists, I think was the question. Can you respond to that, please?
The California Vehicle Code and then specifically the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices requires a minimum 100 vehicles in non-peak conditions. And typically, you know, residents are found actually to speed more than tourists. So, you know, just the fact dry weather in an unmarked car when people aren't suspecting it and you're just getting typical driver behavior meets the California Vehicle Code.
I won't comment on that, but thank you for the response.
That's great. Probably a good idea, Mr. Qualls. I also wanted to add as a comment that I'm really glad that we took the public's input and concerns and looked into the roadways that they were most concerned about. So I just wanted to add that as a comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from council? Seeing none, I will open public comment on item C3.
One speaker, Betty beat him. Betty Bunholtz and then Terry Simons.
Sorry, Terry. Sure. Two comments. One is to clarify that when you do a speed survey, what you're doing is finding the average of what people are doing, and then you're changing your speed limit to match that. I just want to clarify that that's my understanding, if that's faulty or not. So, but my second comment is I do object to lowering the speed between Radcliffe and 41. That's a commercial area. And people, me, like to go a little faster when we can, because there's no harm in a sense there. There's no cross traffic. There's no cross pedestrians. And I'm not sure why that would be lowered in that area, unless it's for the previous reason I stated, that you think we're driving slower there than we have been. Thanks.
Terry Simons, Morro Bay. A couple of things. I'm a resident in the Quintana Road area, and the speed survey didn't tell me anything we didn't know, that Quintana needs some signage. And especially now that we have such a wonderfully beautiful paved street, my God, it was bad before the construction. It was impossible during the construction, but now it's a speedway. So thank you so much that we're going to see some speed limit signs on Quintana. I'm also excited to hear that there is a public safety package going to be coming forward, because I will have a long list of not necessarily specific, but more general kinds of concerns I have about the way in which Morro Bay historically uses local knowledge to define when you stop at an unassigned intersection. I also live near King Street, which is a downhill speed lane. And if you're trying to get from my home to anywhere else in town, you have to get across King, which can be a life-threatening experience, to say the least. And most, not all, but a large number of the intersections on King have no stop signs in either direction, which sounds like a good idea until you're trying to get across King or onto King, and you realize people are doing 45 and 50 miles an hour coming at you, and you didn't see them because of the traffic. So. Anyway, it's exciting, and the urgency ordinance thing was probably a little confusing to a lot of people. I know it was confusing to me, but once again, I'm impressed with Mr. Qualick's diligence in making sure that our chief can continue to write valid speeding tickets during the gap period where we would not have otherwise had an appropriate speed control ordinance on our books. So thank you both so much for all you do, and we will continue to complain about speeders wherever we can. Thank you.
AGP, do we have any raised hands in the queue?
Thank you. Currently, I do not see any raised hands in the queue, although there we go. Michelle, are you wanting to speak? It looks like you had your hand up. I can go ahead and unmute you. Michelle Leicester Cattere. This particular attendee has had her hand up a couple times and just put it down as I was trying to unmute. So I'm going to go ahead and conclude that she does not want to speak. So raised hands left in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you, AGP. Appreciate that. With that, we'll close public comment and bring it back to council for...
Mayor, I am so sorry to interrupt. This particular attendee from the public just raised her hand again. So I'm going to go ahead and allow to speak. Michelle, you are unmuted. Please give your testimony. Michelle Leicester-Cattere, you are unmuted. Doesn't look like we're hearing from her. Terribly sorry for the interruption, Mayor.
That's okay. Thank you. We want to make sure everybody gets their comments in.
Yeah, we have her unmuted and not hearing anything. She's got her hand raised again. You are unmuted, Michelle Leicester-Cattere, if you want to speak. You might have to adjust something on your computer so we can hear you, like your microphone, because we have you unmuted here. Let's see. At this point, I believe we should just move on. She has.
Thank you. Thank you, GPT. So, public comment is closed. And with that, I will bring it back to council for additional questions and or comments.
I'd like to ask about the Radcliffe to 41 section of Main Street. That does seem like it's commercial, and why is that required to slow down there?
Thank you for the question, Council Member Landrum. I'd ask Michelle Mattson to respond to that.
Main Street is a key bicycle corridor in the city, and it was discussed with PD and Public Works, you know, the conditions of Main Street and the desire for lower speed, and it's within the California Vehicle Code requirements to post the lower speed.
So it's a more of a
more of a safety issue. Oh, it was okay. Rounded down for pedestrian and bicycle safety.
Okay. And can you refresh my memory of what the speed there is, the recommended speed?
Between Radcliffe and the Highway 101 northbound ramps is 30 miles an hour. Right now it's posted at 35 in the northbound directions. And then there is really no posted speed from south of 41 to the ramps right now.
Okay, so they'd both be 30.
They would both be 30, yes.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
Could you also tell me about the how you come up with the number? Is it what the public comment asked, or?
The vehicle code requires that you round to the nearest 5 miles an hour of the 85th percentile speed. So say you did have 100 vehicles, it would be, you know, the 85th highest traveling vehicle. And then you're allowed to round down additional 5 miles an hour based on collision records or pedestrian and bicycle safety.
Thank you.
And Michelle, if I could just request a clarification, clearly there's a pretty established methodology that you had to follow as you prepared this survey. For that question that Councilmember Landrum just asked, is the 30 mile per hour recommendation using that additional 5 miles per hour, or is it just based on the 85th percentile?
It is using the additional 5 miles an hour round down, and it's also using the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices desire to have speed zones be 5 miles an hour different in urban areas. So the desire to transition from the 25 mile an hour zone, that's more in the downtown area, and then as you transition down to Quintana, And then the 35 mile an hour zone, that's north of Highway 41. So that 30 mile an hour did use the 5 mile an hour round down, but it's also providing the transition zone between a 25 mile an hour and a 35 mile an hour speed limit.
Have there been any accidents, or has anyone hit a cyclist because of the speeds? Is that, do you have the data on that?
I don't think in that exact location. There hasn't been a ped or bike collision.
Okay, and are the bike lanes, they're just designated for bikes, right? They're separate lanes, not for vehicles.
They are. They're small shoulders. It varies throughout whether there's adjacent driveways or some portions have curb gutter sidewalk as you get closer to Taco Bell. But some portions are more narrow across bridges or, unadjacent to developed areas. The bike lanes are narrow. And then there's also the on-ramp intersection, which can sometimes be difficult for cyclists to navigate on and off ramps.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle.
Any other comments or questions from council?
I have a question. Let's say we move forward with all the new speeds, and so we have several years until we revisit the speeds again. Is there a way, if we find one of the speeds for one of the portions of the streets, or is it absolutely just not working, is there a way to revisit that speed, or is it set in stone until the next round of the next speed survey, which could be what, 6, 7, 10 years from now?
It's a good question, Council Member Ford. I ask Michelle to respond to that.
Yes, if it's determined that roadway conditions have changed, new speed surveys can be conducted and modified at any time. They just are allowed to be extended, for up to 5 to 14 years.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the information on the survey and the locations that it was, and I agree with Mr. Simons. Certainly we could use this survey done on King Street as well as Ironwood. I've gotten some comments from some constituents in both those neighborhoods about the excessive speed in those areas, especially on Ironwood by our school. So hopefully we can address those on another level. I'm looking for a motion for item C3.
I'll move that we follow the staff recommendation and receive the 2023 citywide speed survey, and 1, adopt the urgency ordinance 656 amending section 10.56.010 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code to update speed limits and add new speed zones in the city of Morro Bay, and 2, introduce for first reading by title only with further reading waived ordinance number 657 amending section 10.56.010 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code to update speed limits and add new speed zones in the city of Morro Bay.
Madam Mayor, if I could, for the first motion, I'd suggest that it's adopted by title only with further reading waived.
Oh, thank you.
That wasn't in the report. That isn't. Councilmember Barton read what was in there, but I would suggest we add that procedurally. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that adjustment, I will ask for a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you. And a roll call vote, please.
Could I say, I wonder if Councilmember Barton would consider moving that with removing that section of between from Radcliffe to 41 and keeping that the same as it is now, because it is such a commercial area.
So which section? I'm sorry, I didn't.
No, it's from Radcliffe to, on Main Street from Radcliffe to 41, you know, right, along where the freeway on ramp is and by Taco Bell.
Right. I think that that is an area that needs to be considered. To me, it seems like the traffic moves pretty fast in there now, and it's one that I think the signage will help. And so I don't want to change it.
Yeah, signage would help for sure, but it seems like, you know, I've noticed a lot of times people get off of the 41 exit and turn left instead of getting onto the freeway. So it's used both, you know, as a shortcut from the 41. Do you know what I'm saying? It seems like it might be penalizing to people to lower the speed limit right there. That's my thought on that. And does anyone want to, weigh in on that?
Councilmember Landrum, I hear what you're saying. I understand that it is a highly used road. It's an alternative for a lot of people to use instead of hopping on the highway. However, in my own experience and the experience of my daughters, there's been many times we've almost been T-boned. And I've also known someone who's been in a wreck on that road as well, and they were going the speed limit and they were T-boned by somebody pulling out from a perpendicular road. And so I don't know that lowering the speed to, I think it's 30 now, is going to stop accidents or close calls, but I can see where the thought process comes in. There's some pretty narrow spots, especially approaching the bridge close to the 41 by Taco Bell in that area. During the storms or right after the storms, I actually walked that quite a bit, talking with shop owners and constituents in the area. And I was scared to walk down that little side corridor where the cyclists go, because it's pretty darn close to where the vehicles are passing by. So I could see with the expertise from those who did the study, and it sounded like it was also in coordination with our police department, is that correct? And making that final decision on where we landed on the speed. So I'm gonna trust the experts and I'm going to go with a recommendation. I support the recommendation, but I do hear you, Councilmember Landrum.
Yes, and I would share real quickly, because we do have a motion on the floor, that I used to live off of Radcliffe, and trying to pull out of there, turning either left or right when the vehicles are traveling through there. There has in the past been several accidents right there at that Radcliffe, trying to pull out, especially if you're trying to pull out left and they're coming through. So. With that, we have a motion on the floor, and did we get a second on that yet?
Yes, I seconded that.
Thank you, and I'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you, and thank you, Public Works, and all of your staff for their help on this, and the consultant, we appreciate it. Hopefully we won't see it for 10 years, so we won't see it. With that, I will move to council declaration of future agenda items. And I have an apology to my fellow council members that at the last meeting, it was so late, I missed that and I apologize. So if any of you have items you would like to have considered for future agenda, please.
I would like to consider, since Council Member Edwards and I attended the Planning Commissioner's meeting that I think it was a month ago, it really made me concerned for the height, the fact that we've raised the height zoning downtown, because of now what we learned that the state is able to do encouraging building, they can supersize whatever your minimum code is. And so I'm concerned about that. And I would like to bring that back as soon as possible to consider bringing the zoning back down to 30 feet downtown. Very soon.
Is there any council support for that? There's no council support for that. Keep thinking of Mr. Qualick. Is Mr. Graham still there?
He is not, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. That's fine. I thought that I had heard somewhere that might be coming back to us from the Coastal Commission, but so I'm looking that I don't see support at this time, Councilmember Landrum, to move that forward, and would encourage conversation with Mr. Graham perhaps to see if that is in fact possibly coming back already. Is there any other items? No, seeing no other items at this time, then I will thank you all for joining us, and I will move for adjournment and see everyone Tuesday, May 23rd, if not tomorrow night at the roundabout meeting. Thank you, or the Highway 41 Main Street meeting. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you, staff. Yeah.